Welcome to Everything EFL. My name's Erin O'Byrne, and I firmly believe that you as a teacher are special, amazing, creative, and passionate. But it's very easy to get burnt out and overwhelmed. With my podcast and my teacher training, I aim to help you avoid burnout and cut down on your prep time so you can unleash your creativity and enjoy your work more mindfully. Are you ready? Let's go. Hello, you gorgeous teacher. If you're one of my lovely regular listeners, welcome back. If you're a brand new listener to Everything EFL, you are most welcome. I hope you stick around. What are we talking about today? Noticing. Right, what on earth is noticing? And more importantly, how does it benefit both you and your students? And how do you implement it into your classroom? I will be answering all of these questions, don't worry. Okay. I don't know if you listened to episode 101, you probably should. You can go back for a little bit more detail, but I'll just give you a quick recap, okay? So I was personally getting a little bit bored with my sort of teaching style and got into the lexical approach. And, you know, I wasn't really sure where the gap fields work as well. They're kind of, well, do you know what? I'm pretty sure that classic PPP approach doesn't really do much, to be honest, and gap fields are a part of that. So anyway, part of the lexical approach is you're kind of moving away from this mechanical, isolated sort of gap fill sentence style of teaching that doesn't really do your students any good. Now, if you're not really convinced, think about how many times you've talked about the present perfect and students still can't use it. I rest my case. Anyway, basically, we use noticing instead of, or maybe as well as, gap fills. Old habits die hard, you know, it's hard to kind of let go of them. I still use them, usually as homework though, not in class. I'd rather do some noticing. So the best way to do noticing is start with a dialogue, a transcript from your course book perhaps. Again, the lexical approach, the focus is conversational English, so a dialogue is the best thing. If not, any text will do, I suppose. You ask students questions about the grammar structures in the dialogue or the transcript, and then, or you get them to discuss the rules. You can do this with one grammar point. I did it last week with comparatives with an intermediate group. I asked my students, highlight all of the comparative phrases, not just like a word, like bigger. Highlight the whole phrase, because again, chunks of language, guys, not individual words. And then the students discuss the rules that we had elicited the day before. So, questions they can ask each other. How many syllables are there in this adjective? Is it an irregular one? Is there an irregular ending like ed? So even though that ends with two syllables, it ends in ed. So the structure isn't or more crowded than or something like that. So they discuss the rules together. They analyse the language. And then if you like, you can reuse that same transcript or dialogue the next day asking questions about other things. So for example, in an elementary class, I created a dialogue with lots of different present simple forms like third person, first person, and also like plus ing, because that came up in emergent language the week before. And even the lowest student could tell me, you know, it came up a few times in the transcript and I asked him first, you know, why is it ing here? And he was like, oh, I'm not sure. But by the time we got back around to him, towards the end of the dialogue, they had seen that structure a few times. It was kind of peppered throughout. And he told me immediately, because like plus ing. And he said it with confidence and he answered immediately. And just through that sort of 10, 15 minutes, because it was a long dialogue, He managed to answer a lot more confidently. Another example, you could be using a transcript for any exercise. Let's imagine the students are weak on the present perfect. You can go back to a transcript that you used for any particular purpose, like the next lesson, and ask some questions. You know, is this finished time or unfinished time? Or why didn't we use the past simple here? Or another example would be, let's imagine you have a text or a transcript with a couple of different sentences with can. For example, can I go to the loo or can you dance, you know, in the same text. And you can ask, okay, well, look, you know, we know that can has different functionalities here. What does it mean here? What does it mean here? Use the context of the dialogues, because that's another good thing about dialogues. They have context, whereas gap fills don't. They can use the context of the dialogue to help them with their answer. So why is it beneficial? It engages students and it keeps them on their toes. Questions, questions, questions. And if they know that questions are coming, you say, let's do some noticing. They're switched on immediately. If they can just do it in pairs, you can monitor. The communication is between the students. It gives them exposure to question forms if you are doing the asking. It gives exposure to grammar points that come up time and time again, just like plus ing. You know, perfect example. Even B2 students get this wrong. You can never have enough looks at the present perfect. You might get a transcript with the same verb with the present perfect, for example, seen, been, had, and you can ask the students, what does this tell you? Answer, these verbs are very common with the present perfect. You know, it's good for students to know this information. It's not a gap fill. The grammar, like I said, is in context. It's not isolated sentences, 1 to 10 with no meaning. Another reason, there are so many, preparation or lack thereof. Dialogues, they're already in your course book, they're already online, or you can do one with ChatGPT. Now, if you've listened to episode 101, you'll know that this sound means a quick digression. I've experimented with ChatGPT a little bit, as you probably have too, and if you do generate your own dialogue, I would give you a bit of advice. If you're doing generate a dialogue with some comparative phrases, the better thing to do is say, generate a dialogue with the following phrases, right? And then think about those common institutionalized phrases, or in this case, really common adjectives that we use with comparative phrases. So you could say, please input the following, not as bad as, just as bad as, it's easier than you think. You know, stuff like that. Again, prep. What you can do is take a look at the transcript even as the students are doing the initial listening comprehension, right? So read the transcript and highlight the phrases that you decide you want to look at as you go. No extra prep needed. You can reuse the dialogue. I mean, again, guys, less prep, less stress for you. Noticing helps students understand more. Analyzing is part of learning. You can explore the functionality of words like can, ability, permission, general possibility, future possibility. It's confidence building. Like I said, if you do this a lot and you're asking the same questions, imagine the confidence of the students when they are asked the same questions and can confidently answer. I refer back to my low-level elementary student. I've had students tell me, this is interesting. I've never done this before. They genuinely get into it. You can do it at any level, and I mean any level. I told you in episode 101, I did it with beginners. I spent an hour and 40 minutes on a student-generated text on the whiteboard that included a bit of noticing, and they got it. And I didn't use any language that they hadn't heard before. So I ask you, what's not to love? Now, before we get to how you can actually implement this noticing, a word of advice from Hugh Deller himself. Take every opportunity to notice. Anytime you have a dialogue, a transcript, a nice chunk of text, preferably conversational, as I said, ask questions or get students to discuss things. So, how can we implement this? Now, you know, it's always good to mix it up a bit to keep the students interested. So I have just 5 really simple ways for you to implement noticing. Number 1, as I've already discussed, use a transcript students have already seen. The context is there, you're reusing, it's a familiar content, and there's nothing wrong with that. Number 2, you can use gap fills one day and then go back to them in another lesson. You know, it's completely up to you. Do they need extra practice right now? Could you come back in a week or two just for a review? Obviously, the better ones, the better gap fills are the whole text or the dialogue gap fills that you can get rather than the 1 to 10 isolated sentences. So, you know, if you're doing present perfect versus past simple, ask students a question. Why is this this? Why is this the past simple? Is it finished time? Is it unfinished time? You know, can you explain to your partner? Do you need help? Okay, I'm going to write some phrases on the board to help you. Unfinished time, finished time, specific time mentioned, etc. Read it, look at the context, choose from the list of rules. Number 3, as already mentioned, build a text with your students on the whiteboard. This is just, you know, it's completely student-generated, it's student-centered, you're just guiding them through. Again, episode 101. Number four, songs, quotes, lines from movies, memes, all of these little kind of real life, you know, realia type things that you might come across or use in your lessons. One that I thought of was there's a supermarket called Iceland in the UK and Ireland, and it's basically frozen food. And they had a really funny slogan a few years ago. It was, because life's too short to peel carrots. But even that sentence, right? You've got two plus adjective to do something. Too short to peel carrots. You know, I'm too lazy to finish my work. I'm too tired to go out. You know, think of how many little combinations you could play with there that are really common chunks of language. Life's, you know, life apostrophe S. What is the apostrophe S in this case? It is. Just little things like that. You know, it takes 5-6 seconds and it, again, just draws students' attention to it. And number five, strips of paper. Now, I'm going to give on the show notes some links to each of my social media platforms, and you can watch the video on your preferred platform if you haven't seen it already. But basically, what I did with the B2 group, we were doing modifiers like a bit of, absolutely, stuff like that. Big old mix of stuff. Now, it was definitely sort of stuff that they'd seen before or heard before. I didn't think much or any of it was particularly new. So what I did was I cut up strips of paper and I wrote sentences on each of them. For example, dot, 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 and it was absolutely boiling. Dot, 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 dot. So it was a bit of a pain. And we used these at the beginning of the lesson. Students had to read them in pairs and they had to tell a story that was true for them and they had to finish with these particular sentences. Okay, so for example, you know, I went out yesterday or I went on holiday to the Maldives and it was absolutely boiling. So they're kind of just putting it into context. And then we went through the rules, we kind of did all that. And then the next day we used those strips of paper again. And I said to them, okay, get your rules out, you know, on your photocopy if you need them, but go through and have a look at these modifiers and talk to your partner about which rules match. So for example, absolutely boiling, absolutely goes with an extreme adjective, boiling. A bit of a pain, so a bit of a goes with a noun. And they're all sitting there talking about it. And I asked them, you know, like, what do you prefer, gap fills or this kind of thing where you're analysing? And they all said without question, this is much more interesting. And they talk about it in the video. So have a look at that. So I'm sure there are many more ways to do this, but I think this is enough to get you started. I'm very aware that we're bombarded with and overwhelmed by all sorts of new information coming at us all the time. Like, raise your hands if you save a ton of articles and posts on LinkedIn and you haven't looked at them once. I'm raising my hand, by the way, completely guilty of that. But seriously, I don't want to contribute to that feeling. My goal is to give you enough to pique your interest, enough just to, you know, go, okay, I think I can actually do this. And I want you just to try one small thing this week after you listen to this episode. So listen to it again if you need to. Good for my numbers. And, you know, just take one idea, look at the grammar point you're doing, and, you know, ask yourself, what questions can I ask here? How can I do this? I'd like to challenge you. Pick one of these five ways, try it with a class. Change starts with a small step. See how it goes and let me know. So guys, thank you very much for listening. I really, really hope you implement noticing this week. And also I have some news. Now, I remember saying this a couple of years ago and nothing happening, but I mean it this time. I am creating a course this summer, just when I as soon as I get a minute to breathe, on the lexical approach, and noticing will be a part of it, and we'll go much more in depth with it. There are lots of different ways you can notice as well, not just with grammar. But it will be an introduction into the lexical approach, how to implement it, an introduction into lexicalizing grammar, how to implement it. There seems to be a real interest in this. I've been talking to teachers and doing polls and stuff on social media and people seem interested. And I think the lexical approach, it's like the Matrix. You know that scene at the end of the Matrix where Neo kind of starts seeing the actual Matrix and everything just starts making sense to him? That's how I feel about the lexical approach. You just start seeing language differently and it just makes a lot more sense. And the good thing about it is it's a change of mindset rather than sort of loads of extra work. Once you understand it, you can start making small changes bit by bit and see the difference it makes to your students' understanding of the language and the way you prep, plan and execute your lessons, all with little or no extra prep time. One thing you can do, guys, is sign up to my newsletter. I am currently kind of revamping my freebies and my newsletters and stuff like that. But one way you can sign up for my newsletter is you can sign up for any one of my freebies. I have 5 of them on rotation. I usually leave at least one link to one freebie on the show notes of my podcast. But all you have to do is look out every Friday on any of my social media platforms, and you will always have one of the 5 rotating. And I have just created a new one called Mindful Grammar, which will be coming very, very soon. I'm really excited. It combines like all of the things I love and that I feel like I'm aligned with: the lexical approach, growth mindset for students, community building, reflection, all the stuff that helps our students grow as people and learners, but also giving them grammar that is sort of meaningful and makes sense to them. And my idea or my goal is possibly, you know, getting enough ideas together on this to create a book in the future as well. So lots of big plans, lots of big talk. Let's see if I can put my money where my mouth is. In the meantime, guys, try something new this week. Sign up for one of my freebies. But most importantly, look after yourself. Be kind to yourself and share the love. Bye.